Well may we say God save the Queen, because nothing will save the Governor General.
You know I've searched my heart to prove there's better ways to push and pull. Hey, whatever gets you through these days.
Hello and welcome to Well May We Say, a progressive podcast about Australian politics. This is episode 51 for Friday, 9th of March, 2018. I'm Jeremy Sear, and joining me each week will be a different guest host, except for this week when it will just be me on me papa. There's been some illness, and it's just me, by myself, without recourse to anyone in the world, just me saying the things. Now this week, we have to deal with a terrifying problem, and that problem is the Greens. They need to be destroyed. They could potentially win a second lower house seat and use that lower house seat to stand up for, you know, the human rights of refugees and, you know, the decent wealth, social security systems and all manner of other things. Maybe stand against the surveillance state. You know, all the stuff that the Labor and Liberal parties keep voting for. There is a terrible risk because Labor has nominated in Batman a nice-seeming, progressive-seeming candidate. Although, of course, she will be, like all Labor members, compelled to vote with the ALP right on all the nasty right-wing things that the ALP right then votes on, including persecuting refugees. And this week has been an extraordinary attack in every way. Look, this has basically been the mud-throwing week. This followed on from last week where we had suddenly a dossier arrives with some long-resolved and fairly dubious attacks on the Greens candidate in Batman. This week we've got more general attacks on the Greens, and we started off, of course, with Tasmania, where the Libs got back in, the Greens vote went down, and in a one-paper state, it appears that the line of minority government is bad and has bad outcomes and leads to chaos and a poorly run state appears to have sunk in, even though that doesn't really match what the actual results were when they have had minority government. And all minority government means is that governments have to negotiate things to get them through parliament. They can't just slam through any half-baked idea that they have. And as with the Gillard government, you tend to end up getting better progressive outcomes than when Labor can just do what it likes without having to pay attention to the Greens. But Tasmania has bought the we must not have a minority government line, and accordingly people will vote for whichever of the two old parties is most likely to get a majority in its own right. And that is really hard for the Greens to overcome because all of the establishment institutions are in favour of the old parties being the only ones who can get elected and are opposed to the Greens. I suppose that's one of the challenges you get when you're a progressive party that actually wants to change things, because you're pushing against everybody who is established with power already. Anyway, Melbourne is not the same as Tasmania, and the Greens have been close to winning this seat. Now, it's a weird sort of split seat. If you look at the percentages of who supports who, it seems to be that the southern part of the electorate of Batman is very heavily supporting the Greens, and the northern part, so above Bell Street, seems to be quite Labor-oriented. Labor's coming out with some fairly odd... The one that they've come out with recently is that they're promising to extend the tram line, which begs the question of if you recognise that if that's a good policy, if that's a thing that the people in Batman need, why don't you do it now? You are in power in Victoria. It's a public transport is a state government thing. Why don't you build it? And the idea that you'll only build it if they elect a Labor member federally, what, Labor's going... So what you're saying is that you have so much contempt for the people of Northcote that the state government in Victoria, state government in Melbourne is going to punish them without a tram line that they say that they need if they don't, do as ordered and vote for a Labor member. That's hideous. Like, if you're in Northcote, you shouldn't be supporting, or in Melbourne, Batman, you shouldn't be folding for that kind of bullying. If the state government wants you to preference them, they should be building tram lines that they say are necessary. Now, I'm not sure whether that tram line extension actually is a good project or not, but it's not like if you lived in that electorate and there was a decent public transport project, you would expect that the Greens would oppose it anyway. The other lines that they're pushing, so the Greens are pushing Adani and they're pushing refugees. Because if you are voting federally, and keeping in mind that this is a federal election, so it's not about whatever is happening in state politics, this is about what the federal government does. And so if you're a progressive person living in Batman, this is your opportunity to vote for a local member who does not support the ongoing persecution of refugees. Because if you vote for the Labor candidate, they will keep voting with the Liberals to do that. And if you raise this with Labor people on Twitter, they will ignore the fact that there is a photograph. And if you look at the Well May We Say icon, that photograph there is the day in 2012 when the Labor Party voted with the Liberals to restart offshore processing. And the only person in the lower house who voted, the only two people who voted against it in the lower house were Andrew Wilkie and Adam Bandt. And you can see that picture. And every time the ALP says, oh, the Greens, they often vote with the Liberals. Well, a lot less than Labor and not on those kind of things. And the Labor Party, I could not vote for them while they are supporting what's happening in Manus and Nauru. And they are. And they say that they're critical of the government on some things, but they continually vote for every power that the government demands. The Labor Party never stands up to them on the refugee thing and basically gives them cover and makes it worse. So that is an issue I would say is fundamental in the electorate. Because that's what you're voting on. You're voting on what the National Parliament will do. And also the other one, of course, that differentiates the Greens and Labor at the moment in federal politics is Adani, where the Greens are opposed to the dodgy Adani coal mine and the ALP is trying to have it both ways because they are trying to get... And this is what you get with big parties. They try to have... They want to get the votes from right-wing people in Queensland and they want to get the votes of left-wing people in Melbourne. And you can't do that by being clear about your policy because whichever decision you make, you'll piss off one of them. And so the ALP is trying to have it both ways. But if you're a progressive person who doesn't like Adani, then why on earth would you trust that it's the Queenslanders that the Labor Party is lying to? They're probably lying to you. You can vote for the Greens, and you know what the stance is on it. They're opposed to it. And they will do everything in their power to stop it. But that's not all that's been coming through in relation to the Greens this week. In federal politics, we've had the Daily Telegraph and the Oz both declare war on Lee Rhiannon. The Oz on the basis that she's promoting a documentary which is critical of the kangaroo meat industry. And if you read the Oz article, it doesn't actually explain what the argument in that documentary is, that documentary that's so outrageous that it's a news story that she's promoting it. What they simply do is they pretend that the documentary is just saying that there aren't enough kangaroos, and then they have people coming on and saying, look, there's lots of kangaroos in the country, which, of course, there are. It's almost like that's not actually the argument of the documentary. And anybody who's relying on The Australian to give you a balanced coverage of the Greens needs to remember that The Australian has declared that they want the Greens destroyed. They are not going to report on them in any way, objectively, fairly or reliably. And I would suggest that the massive hole in that story is that you do not know at the end of that story what is in that documentary that's so outrageous? What is the documentary's argument about that? The quote from Lee Rhiannon seems to refer to there being some issues to do with the health of the meat, of certain species of kangaroos being harmed, or the cruelty of certain ways that they're being farmed, issues that are not in any way addressed by going, I saw lots of kangaroos when I drove through the country recently. But they do it in such a way that you're not left informed at the end of it. The other one you're not left informed with is the Daily Telegraph's attack on Lee Rhiannon, which was when she stays in Canberra, she might only spend $25 on accommodation, but take the full allowance of $285 for that night. And they've gone, look, if we add all of this up over a year, this is how much money she could be making. They call her millionaire, former communist. So yes, because she was actually a communist when in her youth, like a very long time ago. I'm not quite sure why that's relevant to her current position. The fact that she's a millionaire, like I think anybody who owns a house in Sydney is by definition a millionaire at this point. I assume that's why, but she's a parliamentarian. Like the attack on her doesn't work because, well, first of all, they admit that all the politicians take the full amount. No matter where they're staying, you've got a lot of politicians from other parties that stay in their wives' house or something like that. They all take the full amount. So the fact that the Daily Telegraph article is just about Lee Rhiannon is just bonkers. It's like this implication that this person is rorting the system when they are doing exactly the same as every politician. And that begs the question, because, you know, just because everybody else is doing it is not a reason why you can do something. Why do they all do it? And it turns out because they're not allowed to take part of it. If you're going to claim for the night away, you have to claim that full amount. And so as Rhiannon says in the quote that they do ascribe to her, it's also spent on other costs of being there, not just accommodation. But this is the story. They've got this story attacking the Greens for doing what the only thing that she could do other than that is to not claim anything and be backwards for when she's forced to stay in Canberra. And they're pretending that it's some kind of a rort money-making and it's on the behalf of the Greens. Do they suggest that the Greens have actually created the parliamentary entitlement system? Fairly sure the Greens didn't. So there are those two attacks. And then the other one that's been coming through today is this one from Victoria, which the state ALP are trying to use to influence the federal by-election in Batman, which is the issue of the Westgate Tunnel. So to hear the Daniel Andrews government tell it, there's this lovely road that's going to massively reduce congestion for people who are forced to cross the Westgate Bridge at the moment, and there'd be a tunnel as well. And the Greens, in coalition with Labor, with the Liberals, voted to force the workers who've already started to down tools. And then the latest line today was that in this morning, as in Thursday morning's traffic, a truck jackknifed on the top of the Westgate Bridge. And the Andrews government argument about this was, see, it proves why we need a second crossing of the Yarra, as opposed to people looking at it going, wait a minute, you're right, trucks can jackknife on freeways. Imagine what would happen if that happened in the bloody tunnel. For some reason, it's supposed to be an argument for the tunnel rather than what I would say is a very scary image of what could happen with one. Now, a couple of points about this. One, the Greens have opposed this project the whole way through. This is not actually what the Labor government took to the last election. What they took to the last election was the Western Distributor, which was a totally different plan. Instead of costing $5.5 billion and involving the extension of tolls on CityLink, not the Westgate Tunnel that they're making, not just that, but also people who are using the existing CityLink, they get another 10 to 12 years of tolls for a road that has nothing to do with the one that they're using. That's the deal that Labor struck with Transurban. This is a Transurban project that changed from what Labor took to the election. The original plan basically had trucks off the ramps. It would have cost $500 million as opposed to $5.5 billion, and it would have been built by now. And instead of that, they're building this ridiculous toll road. And they're saying, oh, well, we need to do it because it's the only way that we can put in bike lanes and parks. But I'm fairly sure you can build bike lanes and parks for a lot less than $5.5 billion. And that's not what the Greens were voting against. Now, the Liberals are obviously just doing a bit of tit for tat for the East-West Link, and they're coming back and saying, oh, well, you wasted $1 billion on ending East-West Link. So let's call bullshit on that to start with. The East-West Link thing, as I'm sure everybody who listens to this podcast is aware of, was the Napthine government before the last election, knowing that the ALP opposed the East-West Link, having adopted that policy after a lot of pressure from the Greens. The Napthine government, knowing that it was an election issue, signed up Victoria to all these poison clauses in the contract so that if they got kicked out, Victorians would be punished with having to make payouts to the companies that the previous government, the Liberal government, signed them up to. So this is, again, this is kind of like what the Labor Party is doing with this tram thing of, if you don't vote for us, we'll punish you. Well, this was the state Liberals doing that to the entire state of Victoria, saying, righto, if we don't get back in, then screw you all. We're going to be making new taxpayers fork out for this road that doesn't get built, because that's what you voted for. If you vote for the Labor Party, you voted against this road that we want that they don't. And instead of giving you the choice, we're going to punish you for making that choice, Victorians. And so Victorians kicked out the Liberal government, and Labor did what they said they were going to do, which was cancel the East West Link. Now, the $1 billion price tag that the Libs throw around is also misleading, because what they're pretending is that all the money spent acquiring land is just thrown away. Like, the state government owns all this land, and they're like, and now that land can't be used for anything. Are you kidding? It's expensive land. That land is probably now worth more than what the government paid for it. That land is, the $1 billion is ignoring the fact that the government now has a massive asset. That $1 billion bought a whole lot of assets that are increasing in value, being land. So the $1 billion figure that Liberals claim is bullshit. But this idea that the Greens have suddenly jumped in bed with the Liberals, it seems to me that they've just been consistent the whole way through, opposing dodgy road projects. And they opposed them consistently from the beginning. And it's not like the case of the Westgate Tunnel that the Greens suddenly, after work began, suddenly decided to oppose it. The Greens have been opposing it the whole way through. And the reason why Labor has suddenly found themselves with a problem of having to down tools is because they tried to sneak it through without Parliament's approval. Otherwise, the Liberals and the Greens would not have been able to stop it. The Greens have a website setting out what their argument is, because you don't get this in any of the media coverage of it, but the tollroadwon'twork.org.au sets out what their argument is against it. And for the Labor Party to be saying, oh, they're reeling themselves as closet Tories, because, yeah, it's really Tory to oppose a very expensive toll road. I'd have thought expensive toll roads are a pretty right-wing policy. It's the Tories who gave us CityLink. It's the Tories who tried to give us East West Link. I would suggest that it's more Labor being like the Tories than the Greens. And that's where the attack on the Greens lies. Now, at the last poll that I saw had the Greens now behind in Batman. And I'm not surprised. As I said, if you're taking on the people who've got the money and the resources, they have the resources to make life very difficult for you. I'm hoping that Batman is progressive enough to decide to vote against parties that, you know what, on pretty much any social economic issue, the Greens will vote for anything good that the Labour Party is going to do that's progressive, the Greens would vote for. The difference between the parties is that the Greens won't vote for awful non-progressive stuff like increased security powers and locking up people on remote islands. And if you are a compassionate human being who is concerned about the fact that we're sending people to hell camps where you can't find out what's going on because there is complete secrecy over them, secrecy which the ALP votes for the government having these powers, like, it would seem to me that the most fundamental difference that your vote can make between Labour and the Greens is saying, no, not in my name, I don't support that. I'm not the person, I don't need for my personal security to be locking up women and children and men on remote islands and forcing a woman who's sick to separate, to leave her child behind before she can get appropriate treatment in Australia. That's where I would be on it. And the one other thing I wanted to note, because I've seen these lines being run by the ALP on social media, whenever you point out Labor's attitude on Adani and on refugees, they have pat responses to these now. The response on refugees is, well, the Greens voted against our Malaysia solution. And that is true. Gillard proposed that there be a people swap where we send refugees who have arrived here to Malaysia, a country that's not signatory to the Refugee Convention, where they would have no rights. And we were going to send refugees to a place where they have no rights. That's not defensible. You can't do that. Part of our agreement with the convention originally was the non-refoulement. We wouldn't send people to danger. We would take responsibility for them when they arrived here. And the Greens were right to vote against that. Now, later on, the Greens did say, well, we think that the UN should be having proper processing centres in Indonesia and Malaysia. But that's different from us deporting refugees who've arrived here to places where they have no rights. And the Greens aren't advocating that. So the idea that they're being hypocrites now because they now support Malaysia and they didn't support Malaysia then, those are totally different things. And separate to that, the idea that the ALP's Malaysia solution being voted down means that they had no alternative but to vote to reopen Nauru and Manus, that is a giant logical leap. They didn't have to do that. The Greens weren't voting for the reopening of Nauru and Manus. You can look at the photo. There they are, on the right, voting against it. Where's the ALP? On the left, voting for it. You can't say that you're forced to do something. The ALP could have voted against it. I mean, it would have been weird because they were the people putting up the bill to restart it, but they could have not done that. They could have been principled and processed refugees here in accordance with our international obligations. And the other line, of course, is the ETS, where they say, oh, the Greens are responsible for everything, every poor outcome environmentally, because they voted down the... well, they call it the Rudd ETS. They kind of leave out the fact that it was the Rudd-Turnbull ETS. It was the trading scheme that the Labour Party under Rudd negotiated with the Liberals under Turnbull, and then Turnbull got rolled, and then under Abbott, the Liberals flipped on it. And the ALP then had this policy that negotiated with the Libs that locked in very large payments to the biggest polluters and locked in ludicrously low targets. It was completely inadequate, and because of the way it locked in the these payments, it was worse than the status quo. But when the Liberals turned on it, did the Labour Party come up to the Greens and say, all right, what can we negotiate and put forward as an alternative proposal? Nah, they said, this is what we're going to put up. We're not going to negotiate with you. Vote for it or vote against it. That's your problem. And then they turn around and be like, well, the Greens killed it. Yeah, because Labor wouldn't negotiate and all they put up was this terrible backward step that was so backward that Malcolm Turnbull was going to vote for it. This is not a failure of the Greens. And of course, after that, then the Greens were able to negotiate something better, which was the carbon pollution reduction scheme that was negotiated under Gillard, which then the ALP did such a woeful job of defending that they somehow managed to turn it into a broken promise because, A, Gillard stupidly promised before the election that I won't bring in a carbon tax, which was, I guess, her attempt to try and wedge the Greens before the election, which backfired on her. And then when this trading scheme was called a tax by the conservative media, which even Peter Credlin now admits was a bullshit line, but instead of fighting it, the ALP just sort of copped it. They said, oh, okay, it is a tax, and we've just changed our mind. So they basically lost the whole argument by standing up and saying, yeah, no, we've just broken a promise. And so hence Julia and all that stuff that ran from there. That's not the Greens' fault that the ALP, when they finally had a decent climate change policy, absolutely screwed up the selling of it and lost government. That's not the Greens' fault. Anyway, I wanted to quickly leave with two special relationships that had happened over the week that were worth noting. People in special relationships. One of them is actually to do with an actual policy, and that is Malcolm over with Donald Trump proudly coming, basically almost the equivalent of Neville Chamberlain coming back waving, we've got an excellent deal with Donald Trump on tariffs. They're definitely not going to hit us with punitive tariffs. And then, of course, shortly thereafter, Donald Trump announcing that he was going to hit everybody, including Australia, with punitive tariffs. So Malcolm looked like a right goose. And Malcolm, of course, now is one or two news polls away from the number of news polls that he used to justify rolling Tony Abbott. So Malcolm is about to have a very poor fortnight. And the only other special relationship that was worth mentioning in passing was the latest travesty from Barnaby Joyce. It's bizarre that we have to mention him again, and ironically I'm mentioning this on International Women's Day, but Barnaby, he'd quit, he'd gone off into the distance, he could have just shut up and moved on with his life, but no, he had to come out and say he didn't know whether the baby was his. Which, why do we care? Why is this a relevant thing for us to be discussing? I mean, I suppose it's relevant in the sense of this is a man who was Deputy Prime Minister until a few weeks ago, until last week, I think, depending on when you're listening to this. This is a man who has so little understanding, and yet his party processes elevated him to leader of the National Party, and they were perfectly happy with him until it became untenable for him. How does a man who comes out with... What was he thinking? The best thing I can think of it is that he somehow thought that by sticking with Ms. Campion despite doubts about the paternity, that he was being somehow heroic, and that he thought that the world should know that he's actually a good bloke. He's actually quite heroic, because look at him standing with his partner even when it may or may not be his biological child. But lacking any kind of understanding that that is in fact throwing out into the public an attack on his partner and on the child, the unborn child. And whilst in 2018 the idea that Ms. Campion may have had multiple partners should not be a basis on which to think less of her, it is nonetheless... It's almost like the Charles Woolley thing with Jacinda Ardern, where he started asking her in that interview when she and her husband had conceived her imminent baby. The idea that that you would make not just who you're in a relationship with, which becomes relevant in terms of, you know, your interests and so forth, and what should be registered in the your financial interests and the potential for corruption and those sorts of things. So partners are definitely relevant. But the idea that you would want to discuss the details of conception of children, it was bizarre from a Channel 9 interviewer, and it's even more bizarre from the person involved. And I suppose it raises questions about the judgment of his colleagues who elevated him to the leadership of the National Party, because somebody with that kind of understanding of human beings, and it's not like there weren't hints that he had a shoddy understanding of human beings before, the idea that these people elevated him to the leadership, and those people are all still in Parliament. They are still the junior coalition partner. They are still, you know, one of them is still now the Deputy Prime Minister instead of Barnaby. It's worrying. And I guess I hope that Ms. Campion's okay. But it was such... You would think that this is the last time we're ever going to need to mention Barnaby Joyce. You would think. But I'm no longer so sure. And that's where we'll leave it. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. We'll do a proper episode with a guest host next week. So there's been illness and other factors that have sort of limited our ability to do a longer and more back-and-forth podcast this week. But thank you, everybody, who has subscribed. Now, we'd like to thank all of our Patreon subscribers. You are the people who keep the podcast going. And look, anybody who is feeling that there are some aspects of the podcast that they would like to see more of or less of, or there's any feedback that you would like to share, either by firing back on the Twitter or at Well May We Say, or emailing us at wellmaywesaypodcast@gmail.com, or indeed by recording a response to something that we've argued in here and sending it through for us to play back at the end of a future episode. We very much like the feedback. It would be particularly appreciated at the moment when we're sort of in a bit of a transitional phase, and it would be quite helpful to have a bit of feedback about what you're liking, what you're not liking, and where you would like the podcast to go. Not that I'm asking you to do all the work. We can do the work of keeping it going and running it, and we will be doing that. But we'd certainly like to hear what you are thinking, what you're enjoying and what you're not enjoying. For example, that cat noises. Are they a thing that we should completely edit out? I feel yes. So thank you, everybody, for listening. If you haven't left a review on the iTunes store, that would be very much appreciated. And otherwise, we'll look forward to seeing you next week. Good night.